Thank you for joining us on Holy Family Radio for Unapologetically Catholic, a show that embraces the unique and joyful ministry of Catholic education, engaging parish and school communities with one mind and one heart. We are Unapologetically Catholic.
Thank you for joining us again on Unapologetically Catholic, and we are delighted that you are joining us today. We hope that some of you who are listening are parents, because our topic today is Catholic schools and the roles of parents and teachers. I'm Susie Furtwängler, principal at St. Thomas the Apostle Catholic School.
Good afternoon. I'm Betsy Edgerton, and I am the Development and Outreach Coordinator for St. Thomas the Apostle Catholic School. We're welcoming back again Father Jim Chelich. We certainly can't seem to get enough of you, Father Jim. And today we're talking about parents as the primary educators of their children. This is one of the writings that you have done that we really, truly feel we live with in the Catholic schools. And I want to talk about two beautiful quotes that you started it with, and then we'll go from there. The first is, "The right and the duty of parents to educate their children are primordial and inalienable." And that is from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, section number 2222. That in itself is beautiful, but I want to add on top of it that parents have the first responsibility for the education of their children. And again, that's the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and that is section number 2223. They stand beautiful onto their own, but let's take some time now to pick them apart and talk about them.
Sure. And thank you so much, Betsy. It's just wonderful being here with you, Susie, again, and talking about this very, very important part of Catholic education. And actually, I want to preface this a little bit and say that really the role of parents is inaugurated as the teachers of their children when they hold that baby that they have brought to church for baptism, and they hold that baby in the doorway of the church, sort of symbolizing that if, like the doors, if they're closed, nothing will come into the heart and mind of their children or the life of their children. But if they're open, then the things they're open to will come in. And the church asks the parents if it's their desire, if their hearts are open, if the doors are open for their children to come to know Jesus in a living way. Because even in that moment, the church acknowledges what you just read in the Catechism of the Catholic Faith, that God has appointed parents the first educators of their children, given them the responsibility for shepherding that young child's journey into life. And so let's take a look at what we mean by that. What do we mean by have the first responsibility for the education of their children? I think that the best way to understand what that means is pretty much this, that there are two pieces, it's a twofold sense. First, parents are indeed shepherds over their lives of their children. They do watch their every move. They pay attention to their breathing at night, to how much sleep they have, to what they eat. Their eyes are on their children all the time. There's no one really as close as parents to children. As God has ordained that role for adults when they conceive a child. They watch out that their children don't stray into harm. They attend to the individuality of their children carefully, observing their individual personalities, temperaments, and capacities. And no one knows better than parents with more than one child that children come packaged with very different personalities and temperaments and capacities. They allow for the development of these in their children in a fashion that both stretches their children, in other words, encourages them to learn new things, but they also watch out that their children aren't overwhelmed by the new things presented to them. They want their children constantly growing, but not discouraged. They lead their children to places of good sustenance where they can be nourished physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Now, it's that role, Betsy, that they bring to a Catholic school setting. It's that role they bring to a Catholic school setting. And I sometimes think there's a little confusion out there. The Catechism of the Catholic Church doesn't say that Parents are the best equipped to organize the learning environment of their children in a school. That is something that comes with the art of teaching. And that's one of the gifts the school brings to parents. And that is professionals who have been trained, men and women in a Catholic school of faith, who have been trained to form a community and to bring children into a learning environment that will progressively stretch them and teach them, yet not overwhelm them, yet at the same time, as they move along, be able to integrate their lives with the lives of other students. In other words, learning how to act in community with others and be responsible in community with others. So there's a very special art there. But what we always acknowledge in a Catholic school setting as we move along, whenever we are presenting material to children or as they make their movement forward, we need to hear from the parents who know their children best. Parents will judge whether it's time for their children to be exposed to certain kinds of information, certain kinds of educational content, especially when it means developmental things sexually or in sexual awareness, also in terms of the relationship between boys and girls and acquiring those social skills. Parents have the eye, and actually I think in all honesty, often know the best whether their children are ready for that next step. And so in a Catholic school setting, we're always attentive to that input of the parent when it comes to the introduction of these kinds of issues and these kinds of growth challenges for all children as they go through school. So their role is key and deeply valued. And I guess the other part of that is that the school has an obligation to keep the parents thoroughly informed about what children are being exposed to next and what the pattern will be for exposing them to that content, whether it's in math or English or developmental things, humanly speaking, or faith formation. And also, I think the school has a responsibility of informing parents on how they can reinforce what the school atmosphere and program is trying to do. So this is a true partnership between home and school. And that's what we look for and aim for, I think, is our ideal in establishing our relationship with parents.
Being a person who has, as many of our listeners do, been on both sides of that, as a Catholic educator myself, but also as a mother of children who attended Catholic schools, everything you're saying, I want you to know, from both sides is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. It really is the merging of, it's a partnership. And words that came to mind when you were speaking were words that parents are the primary educators. And oftentimes I was told as a parent and also shared with other parents when I had the opportunity, no one knows their child better than you. And it can be played out in a conference when you're noticing something about a child. And instead of stating that fact to a parent, saying, have you ever noticed? And the parent immediately is like, yes, yes, let's talk about that. Right. But it is truly a partnership with the parents and with the Catholic educators. But those parents are the ones that are the shepherds. They steer the ship a little bit. And I think that's the beauty of our schools.
You know, I would dare say that in any schools, Catholic or, our public schools, this dance should be happening regardless. However, I think the difference is that in Catholic schools, we're living a gospel life, and that permeates everything we do. And our children that come to us, we're not just teaching them and guiding them, because I think that great love is in the heart of every teacher. God gives that to every teacher. A true teacher loves the child. The difference, I think, in a Catholic school is that we have also got the responsibility to partner with parents in creating virtuous children into going to those places that in a public school they can't talk about, that the Christ light within the child, lighting that fire and guiding it and living the gospel life and pointing out those features when we see them, maybe even more than the academic things that are happening with their child. Certainly the academics are important and are very rigorous in our Catholic schools. I think that rigor is made possible simply because we are walking a walk together to bring this child closer to Christ.
You know, when we were talking at one of our previous recordings about the making of saints, I talked about a pattern that I think is very important for parents to begin very, very, very early, as soon as their children begin to articulate. And that is that daily there should be a safe moment where parents draw their children aside at the end of the day and simply have a little conversation that's made up of simple questions, you know, asking their son or daughter, you know, well, you know, what did you see today? What did you discover that was new? What do you think about that? How do you feel about that? And listening carefully to the answers. And then that gives a parent an opportunity to put some things in context that children are exposed to in life. In other words, they might see something or hear something during the day that the parent didn't catch. But by asking the question, if a child has a feeling about it and expresses, the parent can put that in context, you know, and say that sometimes people do that, but because of our faith, this is what we do. And if you start that real, real early, and that remains a pattern throughout, even into adolescence, then what you find is that this conversation develops between parents and child that really allows the parent to even more effectively know the personality and the temperament of their child. They really do come to know that. And also forges that wonderful bond that every parent hopes will be carried into adulthood, you know, when they hope that son or daughter will come back and say, you know, well, Mom, you know, my husband and I are doing this, but how did, you know, you and Dad process that? And that wonderful conversation that lasts a lifetime, that celebrates this role, this learning role between each. But that is one particular thing that I think that sometimes is missed, but I think is so very, very important and can be so easily done from very early, that by the time they get older, it becomes just plain natural to share how you're feeling, what you're thinking with Mom or Dad.
What a great place to instill how to give mercy as well. You know, perhaps a child might come to their parents and say, today at school, so-and-so was being bullied or so-and-so was mean to me. For that parent to then be able to say, well, let's just stop and pray for them right now. They're on a path just like we are, just like you are. And congratulations for recognizing that they strayed off the path. Let's pray for them that they can get back on. You know, Christ showed that kind of mercy in his apostolate here. What an excellent opportunity and very natural consequence of having a conversation with that with a child to be able to teach them how to give mercy, because sometimes that's not easy.
And in that same conversation, though, when that child is the one who has strayed off the
right,
path.
Right, exactly.
And you have to have that moment. Mm-hmm. And the root word for discipline, if I am not mistaken, is to disciple. Mm-hmm. And I wholeheartedly think that schools and families together are able to disciple to their children. Being on the receiving end of very, very young children, into the classroom, some of the biggest concerns of parents are when they misbehave, what, you know, how do you treat them? And our response in the Catholic schools has always been, this is a safe environment where children learn to communicate positively, how to forge friendships, how to have a community of their own, and to do that in positive ways. So if Sally says to Bonnie, I sure don't like your dress today, you have an opportunity right there to say, what could we have done differently about that? And so I agree with you. At the very earliest ages, these are things that parents should be doing.
Right. Excellent. You know, you have another snippet from our wonderful Catechism of the Catholic Church, and it's in section 2223. And you quoted this, and this is the heading, if you will, to the next section, which I really love, this next section in this writing, Catholic Schools and the Roles of Parents and Teachers. And the Catechism is, they bear this responsibility first by creating a home where tenderness, forgiveness, respect, fidelity and disinterested service are the rule. Parents have a grave responsibility to give good example to their children. By knowing how to acknowledge their own failings to their children, parents will better be able to guide and to correct them. And Father Jim, what you say after that is beautiful. Do you want to address
sure.
that?
Sure. I remember hearing often over the years of grown children saying, you know, I never heard my parents fight. And when I listened to that, I always warmed to it because I was hoping they would say, I never heard my parents use abusive words or physically be abusive to each other. They treated each other with respect. But on the other hand, there was another part of me that says, I hope you're not saying, I never saw my parents disagree with each other. Because that, I think, would have been a great loss. And that really leads into this very, very telling line in the Catechism, knowing how to acknowledge their failings to their children, parents will be better able to guide and correct them. In other words, to be a parent, part of this vocation and part of the role of the primary educator of your child is to courageously lay open your heart and your life to your children, like a book from which your children can read and learn. Parents should allow their children to see that there are forces that work in themselves as adults that need to be harnessed, muzzled, cut, and shaped into the character of a good man or woman. In this way, their children learn to recognize these same forces in themselves and the need to restrain and direct them. Parents allow their children to see how they depend on God to keep these forces in line and to shape them into a woman or man of good character. They allow their children to hear them praying, either in the moment or at the end of the day, asking God's pardon for things that slipped out of control, and God's help to keep them in line. In this way, children learn, by the example of their parents, to turn to God and rely on God to bring these same things in line with a good character in themselves. Parents allow their children to see themselves taking responsibility for what they say and do when they get out of line, asking for forgiveness where offenses were given, making amends for harm done. Husband and wives allow their children to see their submission to each other, permitting their husband or wife to hold them accountable and to speak to their best self as a man or woman. In this way, children learn the value of relationships with others that are oriented to bringing the best out of each other. This is truly a courageous dimension of the role of parents as the primary educators of their children. And yet it's the one that so many shy away from, and they want to keep these things hidden. Yet these are the most important tools. This is the most important context within which a child learns to get ready for adult life, to go out and start forming relationships with others, friendships, community, and love, and hopefully someday marriage.
First of all, two things. One, I envision that we have some listeners who have older children who are at home saying, oh, no.
Oh, no, I missed my chance.
I missed my chance. So we need to say, first up front, it's never too late.
Right.
Never too late.
Too late.
But with that, I personally think comes a caution because I agree with you. Children need to understand that they're everything in life is not perfect. And if mom and dad are you know, just swimming along with never a care in the world, everything's fine, you really don't get a clear look at what the world is like. However, what you don't want, though, is for mom or for dad to use their 13-year-old as the crutch for your father always does this, and it's
absolutely
such a problem, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's a really fine line.
That is a fine line. But if you think about it, Betsy, very simply, is you're talking to the child about the other parent. And that is a very clear boundary that should never, ever be crossed children are not capable of handling responsibility for the complaint of one parent about another. It's those interactions with each other as parents that the child sees that there's a disagreement. There's a desire to see the other's point of view. There's a saying, you know, I think I spoke too hastily about that, or I think you're right. There's a coming together and say, mm-hmm. you know, I've thought about that, honey, and you are really right about that. This kind of resolution between the two that moves forward and ahead, but never, ever to make a child feel responsible for or thrust them in the position of having to be a counselor to their own parents. And I'm glad you brought that up because that is a very, very important boundary. Very important boundary. Some things are said between the adults, but never addressed to the children without the other.
Present. And just to add to what you were saying a moment ago, to see two adults in the living room or at the dining room table or in the kitchen with one saying to the other, I'm sorry. Yes. Those are powerful words. Those
mm-hmm. are. You know, I think a lot of families who don't lay their lives open, maybe because they feel that that's not great for the kids to see, are really doing a disservice to their kids because in the end, that child is going to grow up and should they find a partner and decide to get married, are going to experience what all of us experience, and that is dissension in the home sometimes, differing opinions, maybe those lapses of judgment in how you respond to your partner. And they're going to feel very much like, this is happening to me, but I never saw that happen at home. Something must be wrong. If you grow up, and I was blessed to grow up in a family where everything was out there on the table, you know, you witness that thing and you know that you're going to have disagreements with your partner and you know that it's all going to be okay in the end, that's part of a natural part of family life.
Absolutely. Susie, I want to take you back to the baptism ceremony, and remember it starts at the back door with the parents holding their child, and they're asking for baptism, they're asking for a life in Christ for their child. But one of the gestures, the ritual gestures at the door is the priest asks the parents for the name of their child, and a sign of the cross is formed by the priest on the forehead of the child. While the priest claims the child for Christ. And then the parents are asked to do the same, and the godparents and any siblings who are there too is there as well. And what I think is so beautiful about that is the cross is a symbol of self-sacrificing love. It's a symbol of a love that dies to itself to reach the other and to do the best for the other. And really, in making that sign of the cross, parents are actually making a pledge to their child that they will love each other that way. Not just the child. They're making a pledge that they will love each other as father and mother, as husband and wife, in that way. And therefore become the first place the child learns about the self-sacrificing love that God had for the world in becoming flesh and being born of the Virgin and teaching us and laying down his life at our hands to reach us and to bring us healing and life. And I think that's just so breathtakingly beautiful when we understand that, mm-hmm. I will love your mother this way out of love for you. I will love your father this way out of love for you.
But in good times and bad, and yeah. When we're having this conversation right now, all three of us, some of those difficulties don't get taken care of in one conversation.
Right.
Sometimes they can go on for weeks, sometimes months, sometimes maybe even years. Maybe it's something that is has come in, has entered the family, and the family's learning to adapt to it. To figure out their dynamics around it. Mm-hmm. And I believe everything you're saying, but that's a really hard thing to cling to, and we must be reminded of that.
Absolutely.
Do you see where I'm going with that? It's not ever taken care of sometimes right away.
Very quickly, it's not. But then if you think about it, Betsy, all the more for the parents to shepherd their children into the situation and not leave them wondering. Children will wonder if they're responsible for this tension.
Right.
But, you know, parents simply say, you know, our life has changed a little bit, and we're all coping to find out how to be there for one another, and it's taking us a little while to learn that. Children can process that. Mm-hmm. They understand that. It's, oh, okay, you're learning something new. You know, we don't have it all together yet, and there are still tensions,
right,
and there are still things. But to know that the parents and their home environment is committed to working through this and making it better and better is so important, you know. And for a parent to simply bless their children with that awareness, I think can be very important, because sometimes children have this sense that, you know, if there's tension in the environment, it must be something I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Right, know? Because they feel so badly.
Right, and we have to let them know, you know, no, honey, this is part of life, and you're not, and we're working through this all together.
The reason I bring that up, and excuse me for going personal here on the radio, but years and years ago I reached out to you having a special needs child come into our family. I still have those letters, thank you. And it's very frustrating for parents to parent a child when they're not quite sure initially what they're parenting. Then there's a grieving process that goes through, you go through, because the expectations and the dreams and the hopes and wishes and prayers you had for your child have suddenly been altered, not given up on, but altered.
Mm-hmm.
And we had many conversations, my husband and myself, that were very, very difficult at times, because there was frustration on everyone's part. And just as you have shared earlier, sharing with my older two children that, you know, mommy's frustrated right now. Mm-hmm. Dad and mom are trying to figure this all out. But then we had to say to them, we need to go. And I actually said, I'm going to talk to Father Jim, because you just need help. And I think that that really changed the dynamics of our family. But now that my children are all in their 20s, it was the best thing that ever happened to us. Mm-hmm. But you sure don't know it when you're going through. And those first 5 years were very tumultuous.
Sure.
So I thank you publicly for being of help to us, but also to say to other families, yes, of course, the Catholic schools are there, and you, your husband and you are there, but God has to be a part of all of it.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, Betsy, I just realized that you're one of the parents in our school now. Yes. I mean, you were in the past,
yes,
but not in my time. And,
no.
And I just realized your son, he's actually a big part of our community right now, not as a student, but as a working and very productive and much loved part of our community. And I think that's a very beautiful thing that we are partnering together in that way. And that's another beautiful thing about Catholic schools, is we don't graduate kids and say goodbye. We open our hearts and our doors to their families that come after them, and they can always come back, you know.
Absolutely, because it is a community.
It is.
And sometimes you leave, and then you come back in, mm-hmm, and it ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
So, no, thank you. I think what you wrote is perfect.
Mm-hmm. You know, you also make mention, Father Jim, about families needing to pray and to have their children hear them pray, and I think that's so true.
I can't stress that enough.
Mm-hmm.
The model for prayer for a child are their parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where is prayer supposed to go? How is prayer supposed to be engaged? I mean, they need to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to see that more than just at meals, you know.
Right.
And so sometimes, you know, a parent doesn't have to, but sometimes if they're feeling a little frustrated, that it wouldn't be all right for them to just sit down while the children are around and after a meal put their head in their hands a minute and look frustrated and say, you know, Dad's going through some challenges at this time, and he really needs help. And I'm praying now to God to give me that strength. And because I know God is going to get me through this, and we're going to do it together, and he's my source of strength. And to let your children hear you say that is like incredible. And even more touching is the fact that maybe one of your little ones come and say, well, Daddy, I'll pray with you too.
Aww.
You
know? Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you get a door open that it would otherwise take years and years and years and years to open, mm-hmm. you know. But now it's oiled and the hinges are open, and this is a possibility for that child in prayer and drawing support for God that was never there before, and it's beautiful.
Often in the years past, when I've taken my classroom of 4 and 5 year olds over for an all school mass, we always take a pause in the hallway when we're lining up and have a prayer with God. To help us do our very best in church. And just recently I had one of the little ones in the back of the line yell, "We pray as our whole family prays before we enter church on Sunday."
Oh.
For the same thing, Mrs. Edgerton.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That is really,
so
really great.
We're all doing the same thing.
We are.
Which is that partnership
it
of
is.
Schools and families.
It's amazing to me how much school influences what's happening at home and how much what's happening at home influences school. I know many of us as teachers have said to our parents, we'll believe half of what your children tell us if you believe half of what they tell you about us. But I felt one time that when I was a teacher, I was taught fifth grade, that I had really made it when a parent came to me and said, "We always pray at home, but it's always bless us, O Lord, at dinner time, and, you know, now I lay me down to sleep at night." And she had told me that her child had one day just spontaneously offered to pray for the family and came up with this beautiful prayer. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about our schools is that partnership goes beyond education, goes beyond guiding a child, it goes into influencing a child. And so many times we don't look at that, the good that's being done in the Catholic schools, that we don't even see. You know, we don't see it until it erupts at home in a beautiful, beautiful way.
Well, and how many times a day in our particular school do we pray together?
Oh, heavens.
I believe it's a total of 4 or 5
right.
over the course of a day. And think about the times that you have as a parent, because we're only with them seven and a half hours a day.
Right.
How many times a day does a parent have the opportunity, mm-hmm. whether pulling into a grocery store, a parking lot, looking for a spot, or whether, as we tell some of our parents, when you're backed up traffic-wise, dropping your child off, take that moment to pray mm-hmm. with your child and have your child observe you praying. And I just think the more they are in the presence of that, the more it will influence them, and they will carry it with them into adulthood.
Well, and this guides parents as well. We do the Angelus after lunchtime, which is a very busy time for every school office. It's usually filled with parents dropping off children that have had appointments or whatever. But I remember our third graders lead the Angelus every day, and watching a parent across the office, because I was helping the students, break into tears. I mean, she was so moved because the school was completely silent, yet 355 or more people were, you know, all together praying, being led by children. It just moved her. She was in tears. So it's
a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing, praying with children. It's right. beautiful, and they're so receptive to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we move on, though, let's talk about the gift and art of the Catholic teacher. And we had the opportunity recently to be with all of the new teachers from the Diocese of Grand Rapids. Mm-hmm. And what an exciting thing that was. They looked a little bit like deer in the headlights, but I know that they felt our prayers surrounding them. So let's talk about that a little bit, the gift and art of the Catholic teacher.
Sure, and it's fun for me to talk about this part because you both being Catholic teachers are going to be able to fill in all the blanks. So I'm pretty excited about that. So really, my perspectives here are as a pastor, and they are perspectives with a sense of wonder and awe at this incredible art and incredible challenge. And there is something, I think, very specific to it. And I'd like to identify just maybe one or two things that are specific to this art that I think that is just beautiful. Teachers in a Catholic school are schooled and trained to do more than just see each student grow in proficiency in math, reading, writing, historical knowledge, and all the rest. More than just see each student grow in inspiration at composition and music and art. Developing individual proficiencies and inspiration is only the beginning of the unique task of a Catholic school. The unique task of a Catholic school teacher is to bring these individual competencies and inspirations in each child, to bring these in each student with widely varying personalities, temperaments, and capacity, to bring them together. Competencies and inspirations, personalities and temperaments, and to bring them together. The formation of constructive human community is the unique task of the Catholic school, and I think the definitive art of a Catholic teacher. And it is an art of introducing children to community and what that means. I'm not like him or her. We are different from one another, but we can come together in different ways, personalities to complement each other and to strengthen each other, gifts and competencies to reinforce each other and fill the gaps, and we can make a community that works for all. And if we can do this, I think we contribute something to the hope for the world, to hope for a world where humanity can cooperate in peace and can value and respect the integrity and dignity of all people.
And you definitely need a school to do that. Where else with young children could you possibly gather like-aged people together? And you look at your average classroom, and the children are all within maybe a year or two of each other. So they're all developmentally in the same place. But boy, are they different. They're different just not in personality and in their gifts, but they're also different in their family backgrounds and in all sorts of things. When you look at that, a school is the perfect training ground for saying, I don't possess this gift, but you do. And being able to watch the beautiful dance that happens between students who discover that what they don't possess is not a weakness, it's an invitation to someone else to partner. And I agree with you 100%. There is a very unique art that happens in a Catholic school that allows Christ into that interaction. And it happens every day and all day in Catholic schools. It couldn't possibly happen anywhere else.
I have to say, the whole time you were talking, Father Jim, I was scribbling down all kinds of notes. I have to tell you, it is an art. It's an art of finessing it, though, beautifully, mm-hmm. Distributing it through the day, sprinkling it here, pouring it there, dabbling it here. And I have to say, in Catholic schools, God can come into every single situation, everything. And just a couple of examples, obviously the very obvious are the prayers, whether they're spontaneous or planned. As we stated a moment ago, at our particular school, we pray often and lots. I'm sure in every classroom in any Catholic school across the country or in the Kalamazoo or Grand Rapids diocese, we pray often and lots, but you can use God in every aspect of your learning, whether teaching science for the very first time to little itty-bitty 4- and 5-year-olds. You can talk about the autumn season and God painting the trees with his brilliant paintbrush to bring these brilliant, magnificent colors out. Or when you're reading a story, this is like poetry. These are words of God. And each story has a teachable moment and a lesson. And also music, talking about how the angels are singing. You know, it's just an incredible moment. Discipline, we talked about earlier, the root word is to disciple to our children so that they too can form a community of their own. And then the portion when you one of you stated we're all a little bit different. We are all alike and we're all different and we're all made in the likeness of God. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible. It's something to embrace. And Catholic education is the road to a faith-filled life. It's just an incredible thing.
Right. In my role as the principal of a school, we do get the children in my office frequently who maybe have strayed off that path a little bit. And I would say that I have the privilege of being a Catholic educator because I don't have to discipline kids when they come to my office. I simply disciple. And there's just that's that continuity with what's happening at home. A parent doesn't rant and rave at their child, hopefully, doesn't rant and rave at their child when they do something wrong. They coach them. They guide them. They put them back on the path. You know, they're looking for the best in that child. And we can do that in Catholic schools. We can bring our faith into it and bring what we believe as Catholics into it. We're constantly reinforcing the Bible and Christ's teachings and everything that we do. You can't do that in a non-faith-based school.
And also, I think one of the beauties of Catholic schools or Catholic education is the fact that at any school, you have your extracurriculars, whether they're sporting events or Science Olympiad. You have your parent-teacher conferences. But what brings a Catholic community closer together is the celebration of Mass. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Mrs. Furtwängler is sitting in the pew in front of me, and I'm sitting here with my mom and dad. And I'm sure as you as pastor, looking out into the community, you see that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I do. I very, very much do. You know, another dimension of this, too, that I think is very much the challenge of today, but I think a very, very important challenge of today, and that is to you know, help students deal with not only different personalities, but sometimes problematic personalities. Helping a child who has a problematic personality to control, to shape, and to manage that to fit in. But also to help a classroom situation of other students know how to deal with that in a constructive way, not get hooked by it, yet at the same time, you know, to find a way of building bridges together. This is extremely challenging. The paradigm for our society is that you ostracize the problematic personality, you segregate it, and become segregated yourself. Well, that's a template you carry into adulthood, and I'm not sure that that bodes so well for the forming of neighborhoods or of communities or even an international community. That's a very delicate art, but I think one of the greatest triumphs and successes that I've seen in our Catholic school is our focused energy on working with a class of students and working with them in a way that they actually create an environment that they personally vest in that makes room for very different people and allows people who wouldn't have had a chance and simply would have gone on to be ostracized for the rest of their lives, really make some coping changes that they can learn how to integrate into other human communities when they go on and graduate from us. But I've seen that. I think that's probably one of the things that brought the most tears to my eyes, you know, is looking at a class and say, you know, under other circumstances, that boy and that girl and that boy would have been abused, ostracized, and beaten to the margins and never seen again. And here is this class working together, respecting them, drawing them in, and we're celebrating their graduation mass together. And there's a deep respect for who they are. What a triumph. What a triumph of grace. I'm not sure I'm willing to say that we could all do that simply by social engineering. Being even with a training as a sociologist that I have, I'm not willing to say that. There's divine grace that works. But there is divine grace. God mm-hmm. has a grace out there to bring humanity back together. We just have to believe in it and act on it. And when I see those Catholic teachers that have done that in their classroom settings, my heart just wants to shout for joy that somehow all of humanity is taking a step forward, because those young people will go on to carry those skills to their workplace, to their neighborhoods, for the rest of their lives.
Well, and I'm very confident you've made an excellent point there. Leadership formation in the Catholic schools. Why don't you comment a little bit about that, Susie, because you've been so involved in that, mm-hmm. That the expectation is set. And I've heard you address it to our junior high or even to our younger students about what a leader in their faith, what a hero in mm-hmm. their faith should be like.
And it comes down to servant leadership. I think, you know, all children want to be leaders. They truly do want to lead and to do well. But servant leadership is a whole another ball game. Father Jim, you and I have had certain years where there's not been the easiest class to work with, and it's taken our entire community sometimes to help orchestrate how that mm-hmm. class makes it to their eighth grade year, holding each other's hands, really. Mm-hmm. And that's really only possible by allowing faith in. And developing leaders in middle school, we all know as educators and parents that are listening, you know this too. Middle school years are not beautiful years. Those are years where a child is learning to break away from being his parents' child and realizing there's a world out there that they have to start foraging into. And that breakaway is not graceful. It's not easy. It wasn't designed to be graceful or easy. To allow a child to go through that without guidance and without teaching them how to hold Christ's hands through things really is a sad thing, when what we see in our experience is that you can take all of that energy and all of that desire to be the one and to be first and foremost, to take all of that and guide it into servant leadership. It's a very successful thing. And it doesn't have to be an ugly time when students of that age are starting to notice that other people are different or that other people are getting on their nerves, you know, to be able to teach them. Well, a servant leader, Christ did not walk down the road with only the popular and the pretty. You know, he purposely chose people who were very different and who were damaged goods in other people's eyes. And that's the leadership model that we choose to take in our school. Is walking in Christ's footsteps and realizing that he was where you are, and this is how he handled it. So I agree. Parents on their own, I think parents really need the assistance of teachers and need the assistance of their pastor to get through those times.
I agree. Which brings us to the title of our radio show, which I think we all need to kind of give a little bit of information on, and that's called Unapologetically Catholic. That's something that we believe Catholic, we really believe, yes. Or we wouldn't have given ourselves this title. We really believe Catholic schools should be unapologetically mm-hmm. Catholic. Which one of you want to jump onto that right away first in an explanation? Father Jim, would you comment on that?
Sure. You know, if you're apologizing for who you are or what you believe, you're already draining off a good 25% of all your energy. You're using your energy to reserve being enthusiastic or expressive about something that is a part of you. That is, by definition, self-defeating, especially if that part of you is really good. You know, it just might not be popular in certain circumstances, or it might not be politically correct in some circumstances, but it truly is part of who you are. And so what we mean when we say unapologetically Catholic, we mean we're not going to reserve our energies to try to hold ourselves in, but be warmly expressive in a way that wants others to learn and grow of the full riches of what we have. And I think that's so very, very important, that we be able to set everything out in front of everyone in the full richness of what we have. And so, you know, we have a school, and we speak about our faith in Christ. We speak about the sacraments. We speak about the saints. You know, we speak about everything without apology, without hemming or hedging it in. We lay out the full vision of our rich life. Now, what has amazed me over time is the number of people who have come to be very active families in our school who come from a different Christian background and are not Catholic and find absolutely no problem with that. As a matter of fact, they feel very at home with it.
They embrace it.
You know, because unapologetically Catholic doesn't mean to indict somebody else for being deficient or anything else. It has nothing to do with that. It has only to do with laying out all the riches of what we believe in, all of its possibility in a beautiful and enthusiastic way, and for the value and blessing it can bring to your life. And the discovery we've made is that isn't something that puts people off at all. As a matter of fact, many, many people warm to it greatly. The people that I find that sometimes puts off are sometimes parents who have issues themselves, that they're unresolved in their own life, and this touches it a little too tenderly, and therefore they need to make some distance. And I can understand that they would feel that way. But in the enterprise of a school and education, that can't be the norm that guides what you do as a learning institution, as a faith institution, where you want to lay out the fullness of the good you have to offer and just do it with enthusiasm and warmth. And I like to use the word invitation. It's an invitation to the full riches that God has provided for us in faith that we cherish in the Catholic faith.
If you're a Catholic school, you can't be lukewarm about it. And I have the blessing of being most of the time the first person to greet a family on a family tour. And we do have a lot of families that come to us are of other faiths. And that unapologetically Catholic phrase is, I use that frequently. I'll tell a family, we welcome you. We welcome your faith life. But we are unapologetically Catholic. We're a Catholic school. That doesn't exclude you. That doesn't shouldn't make you uncomfortable. And by the time we're done with the tour and they've seen the children and seen people in the hallways and visited classrooms, they see what I'm talking about, the beautiful experience that we have to offer, and who would not want that for their child to experience that. And for our listeners, anyone who is contemplating Catholic schools, get into some Catholic schools and soak up some of that culture, and you'll see what I'm talking about. One of our families, and I think she's been on one of our shows, is a Baptist family, and they couldn't love our school more, couldn't love the Catholic faith more. That doesn't mean they're giving up on their faith, on their tradition, their religion. It just means that they've embraced the Catholic lifestyle, the Catholic school, and are very comfortable living both. You know, and that's a beautiful gift you can give a family, to be unapologetically Catholic. And I think our duty as a Catholic school is to be unapologetically Catholic. We cannot be lukewarm about our faith. We need to be as fully on fire with our love for the church and for our love with our faith, and offer that to our families.
Right. And I would only add one more piece, that we are hypervigilant. At no time is a message given to a parent or child that their Christian faith is a second-class one.
Right.
And that the Catholic faith is the first-class one, and they're in the second class. It's not about that at all. It's just not a category that we even admit to our environment. We set off the fullness of Christian life lived as a Catholic, and they're allowed to explore it from the fullness of the life they live as a Christian, and discover the differences and the nuances and the added dimensions that it opens up. And that is invitatory and without commentary on, you know, who's better. And I think that's a very beautiful thing. That is a very, very beautiful thing when when individuals, you know, of different faiths can sit down with one another and are allowed to unfold the fullness of who they are as Christians and be able to explore with one another those dimensions of their faith.
That plays out. I was just thinking about our first Eucharist preparation. Our non-Catholic children receive that same catechism the whole time, their whole second grade year. That whole year is couched in First Eucharist. And they're not excused from it. They don't want to be excused from it, but
that's part of the community.
That's part of who we are. Mm-hmm. And those children often come to our First Eucharist with the rest of the class and are a living part of it. They don't receive, but Father, you ask them to come up and you give their families a blessing. And I know of one family that's come back later and has had a similar experience in their tradition and was able to tell the class about it, and the class celebrated with them as well. So it's a celebration of our faith.
Right, but even in that context, we write their parents at the beginning
right.
of the year and say that they should alert their pastors that this is what we're studying this year, and to talk to their children or their youth leaders in their communities of faith, to talk with their children about the Lord's Supper and what they hold and understand by the Lord's Supper, and that it's appropriate for that to take place at the parents' initiative with their own pastors and in their own churches, so it can parallel what we're doing. This allows us to move on to explore our own faith, but in a way that encourages others to grow in theirs as well. So you can unapologetically live your faith and at the same time be warmly engaged with those around you and celebrate the Christian good that we share together.
So true.
Well said, well said. But we have another moment here. So I'm just curious, do you think it's because of unapologetically Catholic? To me, that means we are not, by saying we're unbending, we're not going to change our ways for you. We are who we are because of our faith, because
right.
of our Catholic faith and the following of God. And yet I'm curious, those families from different faiths do embrace our
yeah.
schools. And I'm just, do you think it is the faith component for them, or how we actually engage the children and other adults all around us that they embrace because we treat them as Catholics would treat each other?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I think that we're, as Father said, we invite them in. We aren't excluding them, but we aren't going to change our Catholic
right.
identity
right.
Because we have people of different faith in our building. We don't water down what we would normally do. We do it. And I think that families see that that's a very good thing, and they're not excluded. They're invited in, and they're invited in to comment and to let us explore a little bit about them in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's also another dimension, too. And it's important to us that they be church attending.
Right.
Very important to
mm-hmm.
us.
Mm-hmm.
We are not indifferent about that.
Mm-hmm.
We would like to know if they're coming to St. Thomas School, that they will be worshiping together on Sunday regularly mm-hmm. in their churches and growing in their faith. That is so important to us. It's so important to us. And it's something that we will unapologetically tell them that, you know, you're not going to get much from us unless you are.
Right.
You
Correct.
Know, because this reinforces the faith. And we believe that what you will find here will reinforce a great deal and many wonderful things in your own growth in faith and your mm-hmm. faith communities.
I agree. So with that, thank you again for joining us this afternoon. As usual, wonderful conversation.
Father Jim, we just thank you for coming back. And to our listeners, we thank you for joining us here on Unapologetically Catholic.
You've been listening to Unapologetically Catholic on Holy Family Radio. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions, please email us at unapologeticallycatholic@holyfamilyradio.net. If you would like to listen to this program again or share this program with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Thank you for listening, and join us again next week. May God bless your day.